She called it off, and no regrets. Episode number 103. It's the first day of spring. It's already here, March the 20th, and Target has bloomed some great deals to help my listeners celebrate a new season. What's a better time to stock up on spring necessities than during an awesome sales event? Both girls and women will love the sweet savings of BOGO. Look, you're going to get 50% off dresses. You can complete your new look with 50% off girls' accessories, handbags, wallets, and jewelry. And for those of you out there looking to refresh your home with a new season, Target is offering 30%, y'all, off furniture, decor, bedding, dining, and entertainment. And one new launch coming to Target, Victoria Beckham brings her unique designs to a new collection for Target. You heard it here first. She's inspired by the upbeat charm, take two, inspired by the upbeat charm of her own Victoria Beckham line, she celebrates the shared experiences between herself and her daughter. How fitting for this podcast. Her line is for women, girls, toddlers, babies, featuring soft pastels, bright pops of color, and charming spring prints. Explore the collection on Target.com. I've made it really easy for you. All you got to do is go in the show notes of this episode and click the Target link to get there. Sup, Girly Nation? Welcome back to another episode of the Keep It 100 Girls Show, coming to you live and direct from Washington, D.C. I'm your hostess with the Keep It 100 Girl Mostess. My name is Nina Babel. And you know how I do. As always, I keep it 100. I keep it real. I keep it true. And this is a place where men and women tell the truth, nothing but the truth, even if it's totally embarrassing or super cray-cray. I reveal what you're thinking, but not saying out loud. And my hand is raised. How about yours? Hit it, Girly Nation.
So easy talking to you, so it's fun. Yeah, I didn't think it was going to be hard, but yeah, I didn't know what to expect. But yeah, this was easy, yeah. Thank you.
This has been a joy. This is fun.
I know. It's like I'm having this great we're just hanging out and having a conversation.
I love talking to you, and I love what you're doing. It's so empowering.
Oh, my God. This is fun. I love this shit right here.
Are you ready to keep it 100?
Ready to keep it 100, girl.
Oh, Nina, I keep it 100, baby.
Yes, I'm ready to keep it 100.
I'm ready to keep it 100, girl.
You know I'm going to keep it 100.
So it's spring, it's March 20th, and we're on the verge of wedding season. These women didn't realize how bad it was until they fell apart. Though a canceled wedding is always categorized as social embarrassment, today's weddings are very public affairs. From the time you get engaged right through to the honeymoon, right? Everybody even wants to go viral these days. Couples announce their engagement on social media and they chronicle the whole nuptial journey on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, Snapchat, and their own wedding websites. These stories are going to give you the chill bumps. Better than going through a divorce, it takes real courage to call off a wedding, especially when it's close to the date. These two women have been through it. They are one of many examples of women who've had their wings clipped, left with the stigma of failure. You're going to meet both Beth and Robin. The storyline is primarily focused on Beth and her journey, but I also pulled in Robin's because it validates the emotional side that women experience, or for those women going through it, what you're experiencing.
It was almost like hidden. Like I didn't really, I kind of introverted during that time. You know what I mean? It was a lot of, I had to make myself socialize and stuff, but it was more like just dealing with it. I felt like I had to do a lot of work on, forgiving and learning, like, okay, what did I do wrong and what did I contribute to it? And, accepting and not being embarrassed and telling yourself, okay, what's, big deal. Yeah, it was embarrassing, but, trying to rebuild my self-worth, I guess. You know what I mean? Because you take a hit thinking, then you're like, well, I'm not good enough to get married. I just a lot of stupid emotions will go through your head. So that was all like internal work that a lot of people didn't see, you know.
Robin is in her 30s now, and it was her fiance of 4 years that she knew she had to do it. She had to call off the wedding.
We called it off a month before, so it was very, very close to the date. And I'm writing a book this year that's publishing in August called Love Lost, Life Found, on how I participated in a toxic relationship, allowed myself to be in it. I talk about all the warning signs and red flags that I call myself an alpha female, that an alpha female should have known and been like, no, this is not okay.
A 2013 study by The Wedding Report found that 13% of engagements, that's about 250,000 people, don't end in marriage. That is real. Beth is in her 40s, but now she's married with a little girl to someone else. But this story is about her broken engagement and how long she dated her ex-fiancé.
We met through a coworker who was like, I got this perfect guy for you. So I'm not really into that, but I was like, all right, I'll try it out. So we kind of talked a lot first, and then we kind of shared. So we probably talked for like 3 weeks. And then we kind of shared pictures of each other, and I was so nervous. I was like, oh my God, what if he's like, I mean, it was cool, like, talking to him. Like, what if he's a total, like, what if he looks like a, you know, a donkey? So anyway, it ended up,
you guys were just talking?
No, we decided to kind of talk and get to know each other first. I didn't know what he looked like, which was kind of like internet dating, if you will, but then I didn't see a picture or anything. So just going strictly off of conversation and, you know, whatever. So I was like, okay, he's cool. Then I'm like, oh my God. Then it came the moment, like, send me your picture. I was like, oh my God. I'm like, nervous. But anyway, I was pleasantly, you know, surprised. Like, well, pleased, I should say, that he wasn't like, you know, a donkey or something like a hippopotamus. So
they dated and they dated. But you know what? Beth felt like, look, he was the one. Or maybe was he just too eager? Or she too eager? Find out.
Kind of made plans to meet up one time, and it just was really easy. It was kind of like a, you know, familiar type, comfortable situation. And it kind of seemed like it was unexpected. So he's pretty unique in a lot of ways. So, you know, it was kind of like, wow, this is like a, you know, a change up, a nice refreshing kind of change up from what I've been kind of used to. So it was nice. So then as we kind of date along, I think it kind of felt like, you know what, we could probably, you know, I could probably spend the rest of my life with him. Like, it kind of felt that way. And then I was like, well, let me just, you know, just get that feeling. But I wasn't sure if I was just a little too eager. Like, oh, wow, this is so, you know, finally somebody that I, you know, that I can settle down with. Or was it really just supposed to happen that way? So, and we're both pretty religious. I wouldn't say religious, but, you know, we take our faith seriously. So kind of felt like an answer to prayer in a lot of ways.
What went wrong? Well, this is definitely one of the top 5 reasons most couples fail or marriages fail, and that's with communication. Beth reveals the signs. She wasn't supposed to be with him, or was she?
I'm a speech pathologist, so I talk for a living. I teach people. I work on communication, helping people talk, right? And then he was like overkill. It was like, I can't, you out-talk me. Like, that's too much. But anyway, so it was almost like he was really hyper-focused on like, okay, if we have an issue, we need to talk it out. And it would be like hours and hours. And it was just draining. And that was the only thing, and the sign, if you asked about signs up front, that was in his like tolerance of conflict. Like, as soon as he thought we were gonna argue or whatever, he got really like, oh, I don't wanna argue, like, you know, don't get excited, like, it's okay, like, you know, he got really kind of nervous, if you will. And I was like, gosh, like, definitely, you know. But at the time, I honestly took it as, okay, Beth, you need to learn how to accept his communication style. I didn't take it as a problem. It was more like, okay, everything else is okay or whatever, you know, like, you're happy with this. This is one thing, and communication is an area a lot of couples struggle with. So, you know, just keep praying on like how to accept his way, and maybe I can somehow find some common ground. But I didn't take it as, oh, I can't, like, it wasn't a deal breaker, because I kept thinking, well, it's just me, you know, maybe I need to adjust how I accept that and be more tolerant, be more patient. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I just kept kind of saying that to myself. And it wasn't all the time that I was like, oh my gosh. But when we did have an issue, it was almost dreading, like, because I knew he didn't want to talk about it for, like, and I'm not exaggerating when I say 2 or 3 hours.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm not exact. Like, some people say, oh yeah, it was forever. No, it really was that long. And I'd be like, and what I'd have to do, Nina, is like, put the phone, like, we wouldn't be in person, it'd be over the phone sometimes, and I have to put the phone on mute, and I would just do stuff because he would just drone on. Like, it was just, it was, that was hard.
Beth talks about how he proposed, right? How they got engaged. But she wasn't the bridezilla. He was the groomzilla. Yep, there is such a thing.
So he proposed in a really unique way. I'm a, you know, as you know, tennis fan, so he, like, printed out, like, this U.S. Open kind of ticket, but it was, like, an engagement proposal ticket, and he gave it to me because he said, oh, he's been wanting to go to the U.S. Open. He had his tickets. I was like, wow, really? You know, so I, and it was really, and then he had, like, a tennis ball. He had, like, carved out the, he opened it up and took out the whatever's inside a tennis ball and put the ring inside. So, yeah, it was really creative. And so anyway, that was engagement. And then, you know, that was like maybe November-ish of, I don't even, wait, let's see, I have to do the math. I guess 2012. Okay. So it was like in October 2012. And then he was like, another weird thing about that was he was really focused on the details. Like, most guys, I mean, that's fine if you want to be involved, but he was like kind of anally retentively focused. It was like, okay, like, he was like a groomzilla versus a bridezilla.
Well, the arguments continued. There are times where you're just like, is it me? Is it something I said? Are we even a good fit? Beth tells you how this all transpired.
So we found the location, and it was going to be at this, what's it called? Somebody, I went to a reception there. Gosh, I can't think of what it's called. It's like a Catholic, monastery. The monastery in D.C. No, you know, I think it's called the Franciscan Monastery in Northeast. Yeah. Yeah, they have a beautiful garden. They have like a little hall, like a little.
We're gonna get married. Are you Catholic too?
I'm not. It just happened to be a. And you don't have to be Catholic to go there. Apparently, it's not. You don't have to be Catholic to use this facility. Which is otherwise I wouldn't know how to work. Remember, we took the tablet down and we found the caterer, and I had my dress and I had my bridesmaid go to theirs, and so we kind of moved along. And this is like. So I was getting married in October, and again, we had a couple arguments, blow-up arguments, where, not a lot, but a few, about communication, like this whole, because see, what would happen was, he would get to talking about something, and then it would bring up, like, 8 other things. So I just felt like we'd start off with one ball in the air, if you can picture, like, a juggler, and then throw another ball, and then you throw another ball, and then before you know, you have, like, 8 unanswered problems that are now, you know what I mean, as a result of this one conversation that he didn't solve the first problem that you were initially talking about, and now we have all these other ones that have to be discussed, and it was just draining. So that was, and I was like getting to the point where, like, I don't know if I can do this, but I just kept thinking, I felt like God, he was kind of an answer to prayer, and I kind of felt like, okay, this is just me having to grow, you know, like, I just kept thinking it was me, like, not that it was my fault, but it was me having to learn how to be more accepting. So I was going to go through with the marriage, basically, even though I was like, God, that really sucks. This part was like, I got to get a handle on this communication, because it's, and we went through like really good premarital counseling, and it came up as far as like kind of finding the communication mode that works for you. So it really wasn't raised as an issue, although we did talk about how I shared my frustration with his process. And our pastor was like, yeah, you need to learn how to cut back a little bit on that and not be so intense, Robbie. And then it's kind of like, Beth, you need to learn. I mean, Robbie, Lord have mercy. And then, that's my current husband. And then, you, Beth, you need to, you know, learn how to kind of meet in the middle, if you will. That's kind of like what, but it wasn't an issue. I didn't see it as a, I honestly didn't see it as a problem. And when we talk about, you know, the embarrassment part after that, then I'll share more about that. But at the time, it didn't seem to be a problem that couldn't be, you know, resolved, as far as like, okay, we just both need to grow in this area. You know what I mean?
So this story definitely makes the list. It's one of those crazy ways to break up with your fiance, right? Mid-July was bridal shower time. And 3 months shy of her wedding date, she got a crazy set of texts coming. Not only just crazy, but a bookload.
I don't know what happened, to be honest with you. It must have been another small argument. But like in July, I don't even know the exact day, except it was probably somewhere around mid-July, because I had a bridal shower planned, actually at Arlene's house. It was for that Saturday, and the breakup happened like a couple of days before that. So I don't remember the exact date, but it was about, let's see, August, about 3 months shy of our wedding date. So I get these crazy texts. Now, mind you, well, that's just a really whack way to break up with somebody. But so I don't know. We must have had like an argument, and then I wasn't really tripping off of it. I remember feeling like, okay, whatever, you know, we'll just talk about it later. But then I get this like onslaught of like crazy text, like capital letters, and they're like, I don't know if you've ever gotten a long text from somebody where it's almost like your whole screen is one text, you know?
Robin and her ex-fiance were together 4 years, people. And she reveals the emotions, the embarrassment, all of it associated with calling off a wedding a month before curtain call.
I'm very, very open on social media, so I was sharing everything, but the journey from, you know, dress shopping with my bridesmaids and mom to wedding colors and everything, like anything I pinned to my Pinterest boards were going to all social media platforms. And then a month before, I went silent. I just dropped dead silent because I didn't, like, it was just pure embarrassment. Like, I am calling off my wedding. I don't know anyone who has done this. I've failed. What other thoughts went through my head? Like, how could I didn't make it there. Because again, I was trying to fix someone. So I was using the wedding as like, oh, I'm sure this will be like a perfectly bright moment in their life. And I just like, it just, everything fell apart. So there's shame, there's guilt, there's embarrassment. Probably mostly embarrassment because I was definitely getting married based on societal pressures. I was thinking I had to be married by 30 and then popping up babies as soon as possible. And because of my large social media presence, I had all of these people like watching and waiting and then nothing.
Robin refers to her canceled wedding to saving her life. Yeah. Robin jokingly refers to it as a canceling party.
Now I talk about it quite publicly because I want there to be no embarrassment or shame about calling off a wedding. That basically is saving your life from something that could be so much worse.
Unlike Beth, Robin's decision was mutual. Her and her fiancé decided to postpone the wedding. But it's a little more complicated than it's over, honey. And I'll let Robin take it from here.
Our story is a little different than just like a simple calling it off. We made a mutual decision to, we used the word postpone, I had used those words with him saying, let's postpone this wedding so that we can focus on our relationship and your health. So my ex-fiancé was mentally ill, and so we made the decision to postpone the wedding so that the stress of the event wasn't being placed on him. That was done, and he had left for a period of time, and then he had actually, we called off the wedding, postponed it, so that's the language we used with our guests, our wedding vendors, that we were postponing it indefinitely while we worked through relationship issues, and he actually had moved back in with me, so we lived together for a month. So we called it off a month before, and then he actually, my breaking point was, it was like 4 days before the actual date that we were supposed to get married, although the wedding had already been called off, he was still living with me.
With Beth's fiance, it was all his idea. It's going to take a miracle at this point. But he flipped the script. In this next clip, Beth is going to reveal how this was the beginning of the end.
It just keeps going. Like, it's not, it was novels. It was like 12 of those. I think he typed it up first on like his computer maybe and then sent it to me via text. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, it was crazy. It just kept going and it was like, we don't know how to communicate and this is, I can't marry you and this isn't going to work. Like, he never said, like, I'm calling off the wedding, but he was like, this isn't going to work and I don't, you know, I don't trust that we can communicate and we're not going to, like, he just kept going. And I was just like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Like, it's going to take a miracle for us to get married on October 12th. And, like, just out of the blue, crazy, flipped the switch. And I was like, what? Like, how do you even, first of all, how do you send them a text? Second of all, like, what are you saying? Like, it just was such a surprise because I just didn't see it coming because I didn't feel like whatever, like, it was more like a disagreement we had didn't really warrant, you know what I mean? So I just was like, what? So that's kind of the background. And then that led up to the, it was a text message. So ultimately, he had put it out there and I was in agreement. Like, he didn't want to be, I think he just didn't want to be the one to say, oh, I called off the wedding. You know what I mean? Even though he was, he wanted it to be, you know, like me, I guess. Like, I make the final decision because of, he never wanted to say, I get the sense that he didn't want to be the bad guy, if you will, even though he, it was his idea. So he, because I was going to go through the wedding. Like, I hadn't planned on pulling the plug. It was kind of my personality, too. Like, I don't really jump ship, probably, when I should.
Well, this took Beth by total surprise. And like any other bride, any other woman who's getting dissed, blanked, it was really shocking. But then again, let's play devil's advocate for a second. When you don't jump ship when you should, is it really all that shocking? You start to question your judgment, though, your judgment of character and all this cycle behavior you've been subject to. Didn't you think it was coming?
And it just took me by total surprise, and not because I didn't know we had some, you know, struggle with communication, but just because I just hadn't, I mean, that was like a whole nother side. Like, it's almost like he just flipped the script, you know, like, what? Who is this psycho that I'm, you know what I mean? I just couldn't believe it. It was just shocking.
The writing was clearly on the wall. Her first reaction? Beth said, you know, it was not relief. She was beyond pissed off. What woman wouldn't be? Who does that? Who calls off the wedding 3 months before via text? Of course, and there's really no good reason to explain that one.
My initial feeling, and you're going to be shocked at this, was relief. I couldn't believe it. Like, I almost felt relieved after we ironed out like the detail. Like, okay, I was really upset first. I shouldn't say my initial reaction. My initial reaction was I was pissed off.
Right.
It's beyond pissed off. Like, first of all, who does that, right? Like, we're 3 months out. Everything is like, thousands of dollars have been already invested in this. Like, you know, people have bought their dresses. I bought my dress. Like, this isn't, you know, if you were going to do this, we should have did this, you know, before now. I was pissed about. My parents have put deposits that we won't get back. Like, you know, this is, people don't have money to just throw down the drain because you have, your pen is in a bunch about community. You know what I mean? Like, something I consider to be small, like, it's not a big deal for us to call the wedding off. Like, you really are tripping. That was anger. And then came the embarrassment.
They did talk, Beth and her ex-fiance, but there's nothing like your girls, especially when you tell them the wedding is off.
Yeah, we did talk. It was hard. Like, you know what? We didn't talk face to face at first. It took a while because I was a little foggy, to be honest, meaning like how long, but
right.
Because I went ahead and had the baby shower, a bridal shower that was planned because they'd already bought all the food. Like, that would have been another waste of money. You know what I mean? And I was like, you know what? I don't want to get together and celebrate the wedding. That's not going to happen. I want to get together and just be with my girls because I need that support. And they were so supportive. It was just so, it was worth it because I needed like some love. You know, I just needed to feel that because we were fresh off of the condom, you know? So that was good because, you know.
But at your bridal shower, you brought it up mm-hmm. to your bridesmaids at that point?
They knew ahead of time. Everybody knew before. So I think this was like a Wednesday or a Thursday, and then Friday I told everybody, look, the wedding's off, you know, I'm so sorry, you know, whatever. And then Saturday was the shower anyway, so they were like, well, let's just do it anyway because we want to support you and we're worried about the food and, you know, we don't want to waste it all. Like, put a lot of thought into it, you know. So it was kind of like I told everybody beforehand, but they still wanted to come to the shower. And my bridesmaids were all out of town except for one, so.
Okay.
It wasn't like, yeah, my best friends from college, they weren't going to come to the shower, so, you know.
So for all the brides listening, brides-to-be, or those just contemplating marriage, what is the etiquette with calling off a wedding? I mean, come on, where do you start?
So, unfortunately, well, you have to contact the venue and let them know you no longer need to reserve the date. And that's why they keep the deposit, because they could have rented it to somebody else for that date. You know what I mean? So you cancel, and it's a certain time frame. If you cancel, I think within 8 months, you get a little, you know, it's not, you do get some money back, but we were past that point because it was too close. They weren't going to probably rent that out for a wedding at that point. You know what I mean? It was too close to the date. So I contacted the venue first to let them know that we no longer need this, you know, and you had to send like a letter. I contacted the caterer to say, look, we no longer need, you know, again, that was another deposit because, you know, they have events. And so anyway, and then I, you know, when I told my best friends, you know, I'm so sorry, I offered to reimburse them for their wedding dresses and they wouldn't, I mean, they're, what is Rob? Sorry, I have mommy brains.
Yeah, I know.
I offered to reimburse them for their bridesmaids dresses. They wouldn't let me. So that's that. And then basically we sent out a letter to all, so we had already sent the invitations out, or maybe we always just did the save the date. So we were getting ready to do the invitations, it was 3 months out. So I sent a letter to everybody apologizing, you know, hey, I'm so sorry, but, you know, like a tactful way to say we decided to call off the wedding and, you know, we're looking forward to seeing you. We're so sorry that if you already made travel plans and you know, like that kind of thing. And, you know, just keep praying for us and, you know, we hope to get through this the best we can. Whatever, you know, some kind of... So I sent that to all the guests that we were going to invite anyway, so that they all knew.
At the end of the day, the responsibility always falls on the woman, right? Or the bride. Beth goes into detail on what fell on her lap.
I think for... I don't know. Yeah, maybe because my parents had done more as far as for the... reserve, you know, like they'd paid for more at that point, I guess, you know what I mean? I don't even know if his family was going to pay for a rehearsal dinner, but we had already, because, you know, my parents had already kind of paid for the deposits and everything for, so I guess I kind of felt like I had to contact those venues, and then I was going to probably send out the invitation. I mean, we would have done it together because we came up with the list together as far as the addresses and the, you know, who to invite, but I did kind of follow me, and probably because I wanted to make sure it got done. You know what I mean? I don't know. But he probably would have sent them out if I had asked him to. But it was just... And it kind of was part of my healing process, too. I don't know. I just kind of wanted to kind of get that closure, I guess. I don't know. So yeah, it was mostly me. I mean, it wasn't mostly me pushing the cancellation of the wedding. It was mostly me just picking up the, you know, finalizing everything, I guess.
The embarrassment. How does a woman or even a bride deal and cope with the epitome of embarrassment in this situation, all the way to closure? And there's many levels to this. First, it's all about the signs that she ignored. Let's be real, let's keep it 100. But Beth tells us more about her self-doubt. In fact, she opens up about it.
So embarrassment was totally on different levels. So the first embarrassment was, oh my God, how embarrassing that we had planned this wedding and then it fell through. And it looks like, then I felt like I look like I don't have good judgment in people. You know what I mean? Like, how could I not see this coming? Like, how did I not know he was going to, you know, how did I not know the communication was such a big deal? Or how did I pick, how was I going to spend the rest of my life with somebody who has these issues? Like, I wasn't saying that I was perfect, but, you know, I definitely saw a totally different side of him. And it's just like, you're like, how do you not see that? Like, I feel like, you know, you hear one all the time, so I had no idea you this way and that way. And like, yeah, you saw the signs. And I was looking back like, what were the signs? You know, what did I see?
Being hurt and working through it publicly is a big deal. Remember, it's a social media world we live in. And Robin certainly tracked her journey on social media. And now she had to deal with the embarrassment of taking down her stuff on social media.
So I was very quiet for a long time, and then I just started posting quotes after that of being hurt and working through it. So that was my way of kind of communicating that I'm not okay right now and I'm working through it. And I received a lot of private messages, but most of my kind of world was very, very supportive of how I was publicly dealing with the grief.
It's all about appearances, right? The money, the finances, the ring, the dress, the honeymoon, and even the removal of the ring all of a sudden from your hand, or whether you give it back or not. Beth talks about all the social stigmas she experienced while going through all those embarrassing events.
See, I did figure out, you know, there were a couple times I was like, I don't know if I can do this communication-wise, but I just never fathomed it would go that far, you know? And I was like, God, it's so embarrassing that I have no, you know, obviously I don't have good judgment on character. I don't have, you know, I don't know, you know, how to pick. And then I was embarrassed because I was like, I'm letting my family, my mom was looking forward to, you know, my marriage, I mean, my wedding and my marriage and, you know, the whole ceremony, everybody's looking forward to it. And I was like, that was a letdown. Then I was embarrassed because I wasted their money and I couldn't pay them back. You know, they weren't asking me to, but it was just like, that was going through my mind. And then it was like, oh my gosh, you know, I was wearing this beautiful ring all this time and I'm taking it off now. And it's like, which that's a whole nother crazy story. He actually asked the ring back.
He
freaking does that. But anyway, he actually asked for it back.
What?
Like, I gave it to him. Okay, I was okay with giving it to him, but I just, only because I got to the point where I was like, you know what, if you're that petty, I don't want it. I was going to turn it into like a, maybe a, I mean, it was nothing. I didn't want to keep it as a keepsake, you know what I mean?
Right.
But he actually asked for it back. But anyway, my dad was like, don't give it to him. I was like, you know what, I don't want any ties, you know what I mean? At this point, I'm good with like just a clean slate. But I was embarrassed because the guy was wearing this ring and I would get compliments on it and now it would be gone. Like, oh, what happened to you? Like, you know what I mean? That whole, it just, the stigma of like failure wedding, like, you're a failure, you know, like, kind of thing was like hanging over my head. And the embarrassment of like just so many things and like having to, it was hard telling people like, yeah, we're not going to get married, even though I'm sure the caterers have had that happen a million times. I mean, I know I'm not the first person to call for a wedding, so like, but it just felt so embarrassing. Like, yeah, we made a mistake, you know, like, well, wrong call.
The ironic thing, everybody in Beth's inner circle was more relieved that she was not getting married. So, what were the lessons learned about this relationship? She was being honest with herself after the fact. What mistake we all make.
Nobody judged me about it. And you know what's funny too? You know, like, everybody was like, I'm so glad. Like, nobody told me how they felt about her. And I didn't think it was a bad engagement. They all liked him, but they just didn't like me. They didn't like us. They felt like I wasn't me. Like, he was too, like, you know, retentive and OCD. And I don't know, he just felt like I wasn't myself. And it took, you know, breaking up and then the next, you know, like dating somebody else after that to realize, oh my God, I really wasn't me. Like, it was such a, yeah, hindsight was really revealing to me because I just didn't realize that how much of me I wasn't being. Like, I wasn't, because he was so, like, you know, about money. He was, like, really frugal and he was really cheap and, like, you know, and he was, you know, his situation, he wasn't really where he wanted to be, like, as far as his career. So it was, like, you know, he's almost like a struggling college student, if you will. And I was already established in my career. So, you know what I mean? I don't know. It just kind of was unbalanced. And then I just didn't realize how much he had kind of, you know, influenced how I like to be, you know, like, he had buyer's remorse. He'll go to TJ Maxx and buy like a pair of Nike sweatpants and then be like, oh, I shouldn't have bought that. There's $20 on it. I'm like, what? $20? Like, you know, like, I don't even blink about $20. Like, no, $200, I might be like, I really need this bag.
Right.
So that was kind of different. But yeah, like, it took a long time. Well, I should say a long time. It took me some time to be like, once the anger subsided, then I was embarrassed, you know, ashamed, like, wow, like, I really, this is a bad call, and what a waste of time, what a waste of money, what a waste of, you know, like, I just felt like it was a waste of energy, even planning everything, and that, you know, just
was like, there, wow, like, you talked about kind of what didn't work, I mean, so let's take it another level up, I mean, was there any sexual chemistry, like, do you think? or was it just...
You answer that. Ask that because, no. Well, I'll tell you what the problem was for that. Well, I was trying to be, we were trying to be a little bit more mindful of abstaining before, you know, we didn't, the whole relationship, but we were trying to kind of be a little bit more mindful of it as we were getting ready to get married, kind of try to get our minds a little clear. Yeah. But you know what? It was easy for me because I wasn't, I think that he's a hypochondriac, and so that was a turnoff to me, and I didn't realize it to the extent that it was, but... But I was kind of praying like, okay, God, you know, take that desire away. And I felt like maybe that was an answer to prayer, but no, it was more so him. It really, I don't know, God might have had a plan or two. I don't know. I have to ask him, but.
So I had to ask Beth the hard question. Look, with all this relationship, communication, drama, how was the sex? Come on.
No. Well, I'll tell you what the problem was for that. Well, I was trying to be... We were trying to be a little bit more mindful of abstaining before, you know, we didn't, the whole relationship, but we were trying to kind of be a little bit more mindful of it as we were getting ready to get married, kind of try to get our minds a little clear. Yeah. But you know what? It was easy for me because I wasn't, I think that he's a hypochondriac, and so that was a turnoff to me, and I didn't realize it to the extent that it was, but... But I was kind of praying like, okay, God, you know, take that desire away. And I felt like maybe that was an answer to prayer, but no, it was more so him. It really, I don't know, God might have had a plan or two. I don't know. I have to ask him, but yeah. I felt like, you know, like, oh, wow, like, you know, I'm not really, I'm cool if we don't. Like, I'm good. Like, what woman feels that way? So anyway, I realized that, you know, he's a hypochondriac and it's kind of annoyed me. Like, I just, that's not attractive to me, I guess. You know, like, somebody, something's always wrong, or they think, like, some small thing is, like, a major problem. Like, one time he had, like, a headache, like, on his temple area. And he ended up going to the emergency room and wanted a CAT scan. I was like, you probably, it's probably sinus pressure. He's like, no, I don't know. It's just, like, he was freaked out about it. And I just dropped him off. And I didn't even go with him because I think I was working. And he was like, can you take, I'm like, what? Like, So, yeah, I think part of that was I lost some attractiveness to him because of that. And then he was draining me communication-wise. You know, like, this wasn't, I didn't feel like, oh, I can't wait to
right.
get you home. And, yeah, it just wasn't that type of, it just, that part of it was missing. And, yeah, it took me breaking up with him. Well, it took us breaking up to realize, you know, that was missing so badly. Like, I thought it was just kind of like, okay, yeah, once we get married, we can have more fun, focus on that area, you know what I mean? But I don't think it would have been a lot better.
Beth managed to still find the good in the sky. But you know what? She said she also had a breakup with his family, too. On second thought, dude even tried to reconcile. Guys, let me tell you, when a woman is done, we are done. How many times do I have to tell you?
On the good side, I mean, he was, you know, he's really unique. He's got a lot of talent. He does some, you know, he's into photography. And, like, he just, you know, he's a very unique guy, really deep, you know, spiritual, like, enlightening, you know, conversations about, as long as we're talking about us. The conversations were enlightening, and you know, like, he was, you know, really he was thoughtful and considerate, and you know, a gentleman. He grew up in North Carolina. I loved his family. Oh, that was hard too. I loved his family, like his parents, his dad, his brothers, his aunts. Like, he was a huge family, and I loved all. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna miss them. I loved his family. Like, they were awesome. So that was hard too, because you break up with them too, you know. So I mean, no ill feelings, I don't think, but I don't know what their opinion of me is, because I think he kind of distorted it to look like, so once he wanted to call it off and I said, okay, let's call it off, then he was like, well, let's see if we can work it out. And I was like, you don't do that. You don't call off the wedding and then say, oh, I still want to be with you, let's try to get married next year. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, If you wanted to still be with me, then you said, okay, well, we have this communication. Let's keep working on it. You know, let's continue on the path. You know, like, I just felt like you don't get to, you know, cause such an eruption in my life and then come back and be like, oh, you know what? You know, on second thought, maybe we should have got married. You know what I mean? Like, I just was done at that point. And I think he really tried to reconcile with me, but I was just done. And it wasn't vindictive. I wasn't being like, oh, you know what, you messed me up. Because I really was like, okay, God, like, I just really felt like that I wasn't supposed to be with him, and I just didn't see it well enough until it hit the fan. Like, I really just didn't, and there wasn't any doubt. Like, my other relationships that I had that were pretty significant, I always lingered, I was doubtful, like, should this really be over? Like, it was just no question in my mind, and I was at peace with it, and it was, like, weird because I didn't expect that. Because once the anger subsided, like, I told him, like, don't talk to me for, like, a month. I couldn't even deal with you because he was trying to be too nice and, like, too accommodating, and it was really annoying. You know what I mean?
She needed a break, a clean break. Then came the forgiving part. Beth tells you if she wanted him back. Did she take him back? Drop the mic.
Don't do that because I'm still highly pissed off that you just called off the wedding and, you know, wanted to call off the wedding and we wasted all this money and I'm embarrassed. Like, all these feelings, right? And I'm like, I can't deal with you right now. Like, I don't want you to try to butter me up. I don't want you to promise, oh, let's go to the US. So, like, all the things I wanted to do up to that point, he was trying to give to me. Like, okay, hey, here, I'm going to buy you this. And here, let's go to the US Open this year. I'm like, no, like, calm down. Like, stop. Like, no. Like, don't talk to me for a month and then let me get over being mad and then I'll see how I feel. So once I got past that, then I was really working on forgiving him because I was still like, I could tell in my heart, I was just like, you suck, but I was trying to get past that. So once I got past that, which took some months and a lot of like journaling and a lot of, you know, praying and like, you know, I really had to dive into my faith and, you know, just kind of really rediscover me and like, okay, what went wrong? What was my contribution to it? Like, it was a whole process. Like, I felt like I was in my own therapy clinic, but I didn't go to a therapist. I thought about it, but I just really, you know, every morning I'd do like a devotion. I would pray, like, you know, help me forgive. Every day for months I pray, like, help me forgive him. And I got to the point where I did. So then that made it easier for me to deal with him, you know? But I didn't want him back. And I knew once I did all that work, if I still didn't want him back, it was a genuine feeling. It wasn't based on, like, you know, bitterness or scorn or whatever. But he really tried to reconcile. And I said, okay, I'll go to one therapy session with you. Because he was like, well, how do you know, you don't want to unless you try? So I was like, you know what, you're right. I don't want to say I never tried and I don't know for sure. Because I really felt like I didn't want him back. But I said, okay, I'll go to counseling. Well, he picked this pastor and wife duo that was a disaster because basically they were like, you're meant to be together and God designed you to be together and you need to work it out. And I was like, oh, I would have been like, hell no. Like, that's your only approach here? Like, really, we're meant to be together? So I just didn't, I just was done. I really solidified because I just felt like they didn't have any other object. Like, I felt like they were just focused on that one thing. And we weren't even married. Like, I could see if we were a married couple. Because, you know, the church is pretty adamant about not divorcing, if some churches are. So yeah. I could see it from that perspective. But I was like, we're not out of there. Are you kidding me? Like, are you even hearing what I'm saying? Or the issue? Like, I just felt like they were just, that's all we want to see you is getting back together because you're meant to be together. I was like, I don't agree with that. So I walked out of that session after a couple hours and was like, yeah, I'm done.
So the healing process started to begin. Beth dived into her faith and she did a lot of introspection. After 2 years, she felt like, you know what? I'm back. Beth reveals her positives that came out of a negative situation.
That kind of helped me, you know, I was like, okay, that didn't work. I don't want it back. So once I knew that, then the healing process was starting to begin. I guess it wasn't until probably, I don't know, 6-8 months after that, I realized I wasn't, how much of me I had lost in that relationship. We were together for a couple of years, so. And I started feeling me again. It just felt so great. Like, it was just like, this is the best that you lost along the way. She's back. Like, it was nice. It's such a good feeling, you know. Believe it or not, I did learn about communication. And we took the premarital counseling so seriously. Like, workbooks and stuff. And I learned a lot about that, too, that I was able to, you know, carry into my future relationship, which happened with my current husband. So I did learn a lot from that. And, you know, even about, like, the whole give and take and, like, not, you know, being okay with not having it your way, like, that's still obviously something that I'll probably work on. But I learned a lot and was able to grow from that as well. So I do, there are some positive takeaways to that. I mean, it wasn't all horrible. It wasn't, like, abusive relationship. It was just, like, you know, I didn't realize how bad it was until it fell apart. And then I didn't realize how relieved I was that it fell apart. You know what I mean? It just, until after the fact, so.
Unlike Beth, with Robin, grief still continues until this present day.
Still continues sometimes, even to this day. I wanted to work through it as fast as possible. And that's just how I am as an alpha female. Even when I was diagnosed with MS, I make jokes that I went through the 4 stages of grief within 48 hours because I had already gone through a major storm in my life and I knew how to do it. But grief and grieving is applicable to any storm. It's not just applicable to the loss of another human life. And people kept saying, like, technically, like, you're losing someone. It can feel like death. And so even to this day, I'll get, you know, overwhelmed with different thoughts or a memory or a smell. So it's constantly working. But my healing journey has definitely, like, even reading my blog posts over the years and seeing, like, after a year where I was at, every year on the date that I was supposed to be wed, I share kind of where I'm at in my journey, and I can just see, like, leaps and bounds every year. So although it's still ongoing, I've definitely probably 2 years I was really, like, starting to make big headways in my self-development and self-love journey, and processing all of, like, the embarrassment and shame.
Robin indicated that her way of healing translated to putting together and creating a cancellation list. She placed this online for other brides, women who are in the same situation and don't know where to begin.
It's a sad thing to put together, but I even put together a wedding cancellation checklist for future brides that have to go through this because your mind's not working properly.
Right. And no one thinks of that.
Because when I was Googling things and I couldn't find anything, and then I started finding a couple blog posts, but they weren't all encompassing. I was like, who do I need to call first? Like, do I call the venue? Do I call the pastor? Do I call the, like, I was just overwhelmed. So I've put together a way at weddingcancellationchecklist.com.
The ring, the dress, the honeymoon, three things women think of all our lives, when we're growing up, all the way to being a bride to be. Beth gave him a month to say, leave me alone, dude. And he came back. Not only did he come back and try to reconcile, he came back for the ring.
Not immediately, but less than 6 months. It was like, once he realized that I wasn't going to wear it again, after a couple months, I think he was like, yeah, I don't want the ring. And I was like, really? Like, my parents are out, like, thousands and thousands of dollars. Anything, I should be able to, you know, return the diamond and give them some of the money back. Because they, you know, this is money that they just had to... it was kind of, and he's like, well, state of Maryland says that, you know, it's technically mine. I was like, you know what, take your freaking ring and shove it. So I know. So so the honeymoon, so we knew we were gonna go, and he was supposed to be working out the plans for that, so I didn't know exactly. I don't think it had been done yet at that point. So it wasn't really anything to have to cancel or whatever for that. So what I ended up doing was when I don't know if you remember when Eileen and I went to Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
That wasn't my honeymoon because I didn't have it planned, but that was the week I was going to take. I still took the 2 weeks off from work. And the first week I came down to Charlotte and just hung out with my family. And the second week we went to DR at the last minute. So it was just lovely.
Oh,
so nice. Okay. Yeah, I needed that. So plus the DR is just gorgeous anyway. So that was that process.
The embarrassing part was real though. In the end, she was thankful. Her happiness was of most importance. And her close friends let her know, look, they didn't approve of the relationship, which really caught her by surprise because she couldn't believe that her close inner circle of friends would let her walk down the aisle regardless.
But by that point, I was in a much better place. Even though it was still around the time I was supposed to have gotten married, it was a much better place. So I wasn't boohooing about. I was actually thankful that it fell through at that point because it felt like we weren't meant to be together. So I wasn't boohooing on my honeymoon. I mean, I had plenty of tears when it first happened. But once that was over with, and once, you know, I kind of like, you know what? I'm kind of relieved that, you know, I don't have to go through this anymore. Even though it's hard and it's embarrassing and I'm still hurt and I'm still mad at myself and I feel like I totally missed out. How did I not know? I was thankful that we weren't married already. You know what I mean? Because it could have been worse. I kept telling myself it could be worse. And my parents were so understanding about, like, don't worry about the money. It's not what's important is, you know, that you're happy and, you know, whatever. So I had a lot of support that helped. But yeah, it was an embarrassing part, man. It was almost like I didn't even want to tell people because it was like, what would they think of me? You know, like, how do you not know that somebody's crazy? You know what I mean?
I know. But then on the other hand, I
feel like, how do you not know that?
My first thought would have been, well, hey, if you are happy and if it's like you just saved yourself some bigger grief down the road.
That's what, yeah. You don't think that right away, though. Like, you come, well, I don't know about, I should say, I didn't think that right away, even though it was true. You kind of come to that realization a little bit later, I think, when you, because at first you feel like it's some kind of mistake. Like, how could we not get married? Like, you know, you're still in the fairy tale of, like, the whole thing. And, you know, I didn't have a fairy tale wedding plan necessarily, but it was just like, you know, you think about it, you dream about it, like, oh, yeah, that's what I want. And then you're like, what? Like, I was totally wrong. Like,
yeah.
And I don't think I was totally off because, like I said, he's a nice guy. He wasn't, like, a total jerk or abusive, or it wasn't like I was in a relationship of abuse. And, you know, whereas it was obvious from day one. But it was interesting to hear how many people just really didn't like him that much. Like, oh, you know, I was going to, I mean, I know you liked him, so we supported you. But it was like, you know, I'm like, why didn't you tell me this before? Like, why did you wait until the wheels fell off? Like, I would have appreciated it, you know.
Yeah, but
I had a friend tell me that she wasn't going to be in the wedding because, and this is out of the fact, she had turned me down to be in my wedding party, you know, a close friend of mine, but not because, she said because of some reason, like she wasn't, you know, her kids. I don't know. She gave some reason, but it was really mostly because she didn't approve of the relationship and couldn't stand. But she didn't tell me that, and it really bothered me because I felt like, how dare you not tell me that, you know, and wait until after. But I made the choice to look at it from the perspective of love versus, you know, because I was at a point of, are you really my friend? You know what I mean? Like, kind of like, are you, all these years I thought you were a good friend of mine, and then maybe you're not. But I decided to give it a bit, you know, say, you know what, she is a good enough friend that she felt strongly enough about, even though she didn't tell me she felt that way. So I decided to consider, you know, to look at it from a different perspective. But yeah, I was like, people were like, you know what? I'm like, damn. Like, nobody's going to tell me, huh? Just going to let me walk down the path of,
right, anyway, destruction.
That's how I kind of felt. Like, wow, you couldn't, you know, some of y'all could have shared that with me. But, you
know. I know. It's such a sensitive topic, right? Especially, yeah. You know, it's, definitely. But if they know you, they should be able to say it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about, like, my inner circle, not every, you know, like, I wouldn't expect somebody that, but my inner circle, I was like, y'all could have told me, you know?
The dress. You have to know about the dress, Beth. In this next clip, she shares what she did with the dress.
You know, I still have that stinking dress. So, that dress. Fortunately, the dress was this amazingly good deal that I looked up on at a bridal show. They had, like, I think something couture, like some bridal boutique store had, like, these rack dresses at this bridal show at the convention center, and it was like any dress for $100, but you can't return it. So I found it perfect. It fit me perfectly. I loved it, and I bought it, like, early on, like in January of that year. So I had it, and $100. So I have it still because I never wore it. It was brand new. Nobody ever wore it. Never been sized or anything. So $100. A girlfriend of mine was getting married, and I said, I have a dress. If you like it, you can have it.
Nice.
She liked it, but it was too heavy. Like, the train is kind of heavy. The skirt part, I'm sorry. And then the train is a little heavy weighted because of how it's designed. And it was kind of like, yeah. So she didn't want to wear it, and her sister didn't want it. So I was kind of offering it to whoever. But I'm just going to donate it to, it's like some charity for the wives of, people in the military who are getting married that don't have access to dress, like maybe overseas or whatever. So
nice.
It's some really cool charity that I'm going to donate that one and my actual wedding dress to, I think. Cause I mean, I'm never going to wear it again, but it wasn't like, I haven't spent a lot of money. That's one thing I don't I've seen some beautiful wedding dresses, but I'm just not going to give $10,000 for a wedding dress that I'm going to wear one time. So,
right.
I'm not really nostalgic about it. I mean, I wouldn't mind making something out of the, you know, like the train or whatever, just to have a memento from my wedding dress, but I have the pictures, so yeah. So that's it. Yeah, I still have it in the basement. I need to donate that in the beginning of the year and get that out of there. It's just taking up space, but yeah. That's it. I had jewelry, everything. I had all that stuff was bought, but it's all good. It's so funny too, like, now that I am married and everything was so different from the first, you know, wedding plans. It's like, I can't really remember that much stuff, but yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
You bring it out.
Okay, so fast forward to 2017. Beth is married and she now has a daughter. There is some baggage claim, though. Beth and Robin reflect on the then and now and how they found their happy again.
So I'm a firm believer that I went through that. I had to go through that part to get to this part. It was almost like I had to go through that experience to be able to come out and then be ready. It was all about preparation because I think God had to put me in a point where I was ready to be a different person. Like, you know what I mean? Like I that was a whole transformation. I mean, I didn't change completely. I didn't go from like one person to a totally different person, but I had to learn. And I think I had to have deeper faith too. Like, it really kind of made me dive back into my faith and like really be grounded there. Cause I wasn't, you know, like it's like that really made me rely on. And I think I had to get to that point. And then when I came out of it, Robbie and I just kind of reconnected like out of the blue, like, so you know, like I feel like it was God kind of ordaining that, you know, because it was like it's so random. And this was and what's amazing is I thought what I had before was good, you know, in a lot of ways, and this just blew it out of the water. So then you're like, wow, like I thought what I had before was good, this is like totally, you know, out of, I don't know how to, you know, this is way 150,000 times better, you know. So
awesome.
It's actually unmeasurable. So that was pretty cool to feel that and just kind of and have to like not let the lingering stuff from before, because I always felt like with my ex, you know, it was like, okay, he would do this for me, but he would expect something in return, or it would complain after doing so much if I hadn't done anything, like, and like he was kind of, I won't say tit for tat, but I guess for lack of better words, he was kind of more tit for tat. And so with Robbie, it was like, are you sure you don't mind? Like I had to get out of making sure he wasn't going to be like tit for tat, because I had a little bit of baggage from being with somebody who's like that, you know.
Right.
Like, are you saying you're okay? You're just going to do that? And yeah, it's fine, you know. So once I kind of had to kind of learn not to question that about, I mean, I wasn't questioning him, but you know, I had a tendency to be like, are you sure?
Yeah.
He's like, yes, like chill out. I'm like, okay, sorry. You know, I realized that was a little bit of baggage from not realizing that I had even, you know, took on that habit of double checking because of him. But yeah, so
yeah,
and of course, you know, it's not perfect, you know, nothing is, but you know, it's definitely like such a difference. They're not even comparable, but I did learn a lot, and I feel like I was at a good place because I knew Robbie from before, so he wasn't like the first time meeting, and we just kind of reconnected after like 10 years or 9 years.
Really?
I felt like I was at the place, I was a good place, that I knew what I wanted, I knew what I didn't want, I knew what I wasn't going to go through, you know what I mean? So I had to get to that point, and then it was like the rest was history. So, and it will be, I guess we have more history to write, but
but I'm a fixer, and I tried to fix a broken human being, and in the process lost my happiness, lost my sense of self, and realized that I actually didn't really love myself at the time. And so I've discovered an amazing journey of happiness, self-care, self-love, all of those terms that you want to associate with it, and just all of the little steps and tips and tricks that I've done to find my happy again.
She refused to be a bitter woman and a woman scorned. So she had a lot of work to do on herself, as well as doing some self-introspection. In both cases, they had been reflecting on their relationships and in some cases doubting it. There are two types of pain, one that hurts and one that changes you. Both women made a hard personal decision that these life choices were not working. These ladies have trained their mind to see the good in every situation. And that wraps up another episode of the Keep It 100 Girl Show. Yay! Your go-to girlfriend is here to empower you every week and level up your self-confidence so you know what? That you realize your self-worth. We celebrate embarrassment, self-love, and those life lessons that made you go, sheesh. The fact that you all are being open, vulnerable, and honest is a true testament of what it takes to keep a 100 in your life. Before you go, give me some love, Girly Nation. If you really like this episode and other ones that I've published, kindly leave me a rating, in fact, a 5-star rating and review in iTunes or Stitcher. I rely on it a whole lot because it helps me stand out. Stand out in the crowd, this worldly crowd. And you know what? It helps women and even you men understand each other better. New episodes of the Keep It 100 Girl Show drop every Tuesday on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Auto Radio, and iHeartRadio. If you like my style, my episodes, spread the good word, share my podcast on social, that's Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, on the Keep It 100 Girl page. And you know what? I'm going to help you out even further. You can find me using the handle at Nina Babel. That's Babe with an L. Like, hey, babe, you know what I mean? So if you want to share your story, drop me a line, questions, story requests, or even a pitch, use my direct email address, nina@ninababel.com. And like always, keep it 100. I keep it real. I keep it true. Smooches!